I'm Jamie Hurst, and for the MSU Denver Alumni Association, we're excited to bring you Bird Talk, a podcast about our alumni, their careers, and their lives.
I had a 1979 Toyota Corolla, and I had a Chilton manual.
Oh, yeah.
I had that thing dog-eared.
Oh, yeah. All the places you know you gotta go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Especially like the radiator section.
100%.
Yeah.
Today's guest is Matt Maley. Matt is a 2006 graduate of the College of Business, where he earned his degree in marketing. Matt's work in marketing business development started while he was still in school in 2005. And by 2011, Matt had become one of the most prolific business development professionals in the Colorado architecture, engineering, and construction industry. Today, he is a principal at Alliance Investment. And while there is so much to talk about regarding Matt's career trajectory and professional achievements, this month's Bird Talk will be a little bit different. In 2021, Matt started the Matthew P. Campbell Scholarship for Future Marketing Professionals at MSU Denver to honor his friend and fellow alumnus, Matt Campbell, who passed away in August 2019. Matt met Campbell working in the business development industry, and the two immediately connected because of the foundational trust they had, knowing they were both roadrunners. So today, we're going to talk about the deep ties that bind our roadrunner community together and learn more about the Matthew P. Campbell Scholarship. Matt is a fourth-generation Coloradan, outdoor enthusiast, Jujitero, husband and father of three. He is a proud MSU Denver graduate, the Alumni Association's 2021 Philanthropist of the Year, and an incredible representation of roadrunners doing good in our communities. Matt, welcome to Bird Talk.
Jujitero. I don't even know if I've ever even heard
it
that
It is the
before.
Official way that the Brazilians talk about someone who does jujitsu.
Oh, I got you.
Okay. And there's a different one if you were doing like Japanese jujitsu.
Oh, okay.
So I went with the Brazilian for you.
Jujitero. Okay.
Jujitero. Yeah.
Okay. I'll remember that.
Yeah. So you do jujitsu though. That's been a recent thing?
I started jujitsu in 2015. So,
okay.
Yeah.
How far along are we? How many belts?
Brown belt.
Okay.
Yeah. Brown belt as of today, but always learning.
Always learning. Do you do competitions too, or is it just kind of the...
I've done them. Like the focus it takes to do the competition is tough when you're working or you've got family obligations and all that, because I've done them where I've been focused and, you know, done well. Done them when I wasn't focused and got smoked. So
sure.
I realized that it's more fun to just, it's a really great way to turn your mind off and exercise and the camaraderie with your training partners and all that. The competition kind of adds a little bit more pressure to the training and all that. And it's like anything, if there's competition involved, you take it more seriously.
Sure.
And that tends to be when I have everything kind of lined out, no fires to put out.
Sure.
But one of these days, maybe get back into it. I don't say, you know, never, but for right now, I think the competition belt is hung up.
And that's okay. I mean, I think about that all the time. I love that you say it's about turning your brain off. Whatever we can find in those moments that can just let us find some sort of serenity, and especially if it's active and it's physical and you're working your body and your mind, I think it's incredible. I'm a big wrestling fan. So actually, I just watched the NCAA championships and like super fun because I spent some years in Iowa and I worked really closely with the wrestling team when I worked at Iowa State. And so we had two national champions when I was there, and Kale Sanderson was the coach.
Wow.
So it was just like surrounded by Olympians all the time.
Yeah.
Ed Bannock, who got a gold medal in the Olympics, wrestled at Iowa, but he was my partner in compliance. And then Bobby Douglas, who was the coach of Kale's, that got the gold medal. Like, so it was just like gold medalists walking all around, which was so cool. But
wow.
I got to know Jake Varner very well, and he ended up getting a gold in London. And it was so funny. He'd come in my office and helping him through kind of some law classes and things that he was doing, because he was a political science and like criminal justice major. And just a completely different dude one-on-one when you saw him in the arena on match day, because you just go to a different place. And especially when you're dealing with competition, I think at that level, you have to turn something on.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That's amazing. Love wrestling.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
All three of my kids wrestle. My daughter's at CSU as a freshman, but she wrestled for 4 years for Chatfield High School.
Very cool.
My other daughter's wrestling for Chatfield. And then my son is going in as a freshman to wrestle as well. So yeah, it's like jujitsu and wrestling.
All the grappling stuff.
Yeah,
you have
exactly.
to go to a different place.
The grappling arts.
Yeah.
It's a way to, it's hard to think about your woes or your problems or anything else when somebody's trying to strangle you or like throw you, mat return you,
right?
You tend to focus.
To me, it's just like the purest form of competition, because you can't hide behind a teammate. Like, oh, I'm having a bad day. Like, it is just hand-to-hand combat, but in a way that is just like, nope, my technique matters. It's not just about size. I've got two nephews that wrestled, stood on the podium in high school state championships.
Wow.
None ever won, but they got really close. But it's so fascinating for me to watch, especially my younger nephew, Joey. He just graduated early and he's now at Iowa playing football. So he's a big guy. Wow. He's a lineman there. But I mean, he stands in the circle with some of these guys, especially beginning of the season. And I'm like, oh, you're 260 and going to go play football at Iowa. And you see some other kid that isn't maybe as big. And yet Joey might get taken down because right. the technique matters so much more than just about the weight you're throwing around. To me, it just is all about
especially
the mental game.
Especially heavyweight like that. You have people that I think it's like 265 mm-hmm. is the top end of what the boys can do.
And yeah.
So yeah, you got like, you know, I think it's 235 to 265.
Right. And that's a big 30 difference.
Pound swing is big with that those big guys.
A very big difference.
Yeah.
No, and especially if you've got like a good 190. And so it's like, well, maybe I'm only 195, right, but this guy's better. Up. So I'm wrestling up.
Right. It's the absolute best sport, in my opinion, for, you know, just athleticism, mm-hmm. staying in shape, discipline, but just all the stuff that you get to take into life with you. Because yeah, when you cross that scoring table and mm-hmm. everyone's on your team, everyone's mm-hmm. there patting you on the back, but you're the one that has to cross that scoring table and get mm-hmm. out to the center line. And
yep.
and anybody that's willing to put on a singlet and mm-hmm. go wrestle in high school, especially girls, mm-hmm. You know, they've already won. And I tell my daughters all the time that, you know, win or lose, I think there's like, you know, 1,200 or 1,800 kids in their mm-hmm. high school. I'm not exactly sure, but like if half of those are girls, mm-hmm. well, there's only 20 of you on the team, right? Mm-hmm. There's 10 varsity girls classes, for Chatfield. Yeah, yeah mm-hmm. because they don't have the upper weight classes. So there's only 10 of you that are on varsity out of all those girls. But just putting on the singlet alone, just to walk out there and do something like that is you've already won.
Oh, 100%.
Really, the majority of the people. So
I know it has been fun to see women's wrestling in the NCAA now too. And yeah. I'll be surprised to see if anyone takes down Iowa in a very long time, but I know it's yeah. only a handful of programs, but Chatfield had a women's
yeah.
wrestling.
Yeah. So, awesome. And two of the girls that came off of that team went to, what is it? North Central in Chicago.
Okay.
And that was the number one girls team mm-hmm. until Iowa put their team together yeah. and recruited. So I believe they're the number two.
Oh, that's
girls.
Awesome.
There were two girls, Janessa George and Taylor Meese. My oldest daughter was on their team. Very and so, cool. yeah, they're phenomenal wrestlers. That program was 5-time state champions.
Oh, that's awesome.
Was the leading edge of girls wrestling kind yeah. of during the pilot program. Mm-hmm. And so Chatfield won all the state championships from the pilot program to the first three. And so they had 5 in a row. And
yeah.
we just happened to be in the neighborhood. And, yeah. and my daughter was doing jiu-jitsu, found that program through a sticker at like a middle school event. Okay. And I was like, hey, I'm on the wrestling team. And
that's awesome. It's not no, only is no she one of 10 family. That put on a singlet, she's one of 10 that won a handful of yeah. state championships.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a lot of people can say that. That's
she was on a
cool.
very great team. So we're fortunate to have the wrestling in our lives
yeah
too.
It's an important thing, and I didn't really grow up with it, and so I actually my first introduction to it was I did my graduate work in Indiana, and I was a graduate assistant softball and volleyball coach, you know, making $8,000 a year and a meal plan, you know, right. and so I was right. like any extra
killing
money
it.
killing it, any extra money you could possibly have. And they're like, well, the wrestling team needs drivers for their van. So I was like, sure, I'm in, like yeah. give me $20 and I'll drive these guys to Chicago to wrestle, whatever the case might be. But I'd never experienced it. So I was used to my travel as a college athlete was, you know, I played softball in college. And so it was like, okay, yeah, we go and we have team dinner and then we have breakfast in the morning and we do this. And so I'm like, we pull into Chicago and they're like, all right, see you in the morning for, we got to be there at weigh-ins for like 6 o'clock or whatever. I was like, well, what about dinner? They're like, oh, we don't eat.
Yeah.
This is a bummer.
Yeah.
So it was just a totally different world.
My middle daughter, Natalie, is on the tennis team after wrestling season. And yeah, she's now it's like they bring snacks to the
right.
court.
Totally
Everybody
different.
Everybody eats before and after.
Right.
Nobody has to get on a scale.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a completely different
it
mindset.
It was. And I was just like, oh, these poor young men, like they're, you know, 18, 19, yeah. 20 years old and just trying to cut weight or stay what they need to do. And then you see them as soon as they weigh in. It is just all the protein
oh, yeah.
bars, all the things.
Right.
I'll tell you, the best meal I ever had, though, traveling with any team, and that includes some football programs that I traveled with, is post-wrestling meat meals.
Yeah.
Because then it's like we are going to the steakhouse and we are eating all of it because we don't have to worry about this for 6 days,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, the girls traveled to Texas for an Amarillo tournament, and the Big Texan is the home of the 72
Oh, yeah, yeah, the huge steak. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's where we always go. We stay right
oh,
next
that's
there.
Perfect.
And the night before the weigh-ins, you know, it's a much different meal plan than after the tournament is over.
Absolutely.
And what the girls order. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I love it. I love that we were able, because I learned the word jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
We were able to
great.
Talk about
no.
our shared love
I mean,
of grappling.
I could talk for hours about wrestling and jiu-jitsu. So,
yeah. It's been fun to have that part of our life, which we thought was mostly over because our nephews are now graduated and our younger ones don't wrestle. And to be able to still have those conversations and be like, no, I watched Spencer Lee and he got lost. He lost in this tournament and whatever, you know, yeah. it's a fun thing.
Well, you
I know
you just went up a notch in my book.
Well, see,
being able to reference all this.
My
my Kale Sanderson Wheaties box.
Oh, wow.
It's been sitting in my window too long, and I feel like I'm okay about it, but he signed it for me.
That's unbelievable.
I know. And now he's just winning national championships.
When did he go to Penn State? Because he was like an assistant coach at Iowa State.
And then he was the head coach for maybe three or four seasons. That was when I was there. I think he had – when did I leave? I was there 07 to 11.
Okay.
And I think we about left around the same time. So either he left 10, 11, or 12, and then he's been at Penn State since.
Yeah, I think he's like 10 years or 12 years or something like that at Penn State.
Yeah, so he could have been – he could have left about 2012, and then he's been there, and it's just been championship after championship.
Makes it fun. It's like the Yankees, right?
It is. Try and take them down.
Yeah, they have the one big pinstripe, you know, across the stomach.
Exactly. And it is. It's the most bland singlet you could ever have, but it works because everybody knows who you are.
Exactly. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that's very cool. I'm glad you got a chance to interact with some of the wrestling legends.
It was unbelievable. It was a very, very cool deal. So. Yeah. Anyhow, we're not here to talk about wrestling, although we could for a very long time. Yeah. So you were born and raised in Southwest Colorado.
Yeah.
And then moved to Denver late 80s. I just personally want to know, since you're still an outdoor enthusiast, love all that stuff, was it hard being like a 9-year-old kid leaving the frontier and coming to the city?
It was. Like my whole family is from the Cortez Durango area. So I was born in Durango. We lived there for a little while, but that was kind of the regional hospital.
Yeah.
And so we actually lived in Cortez most of my early childhood. And I still have family down there. I have an older sister that lives down there as well. So yeah, when we were going to move to Denver, and the whole family, my grandparents and aunts and uncles were like, you better hold hands with mom and dad. Like they will take you.
This is the city.
They will snatch you. And that was 80s Denver.
Correct.
It's probably like, you know, today's Durango.
Right.
You know? So it was very scary as a little kid. I thought, you know, for sure I was going to get kidnapped the moment I got out of the car. But here we are, you know, years later and haven't been kidnapped yet.
No, so, you're good. Yeah. But you golf, you boat, you hike.
Yeah. So our kind of family thing down there was every spring break, summer, we'd go to Lake Powell. It was, you know, small town living. And so Lake Powell's kind of had a near dear spot in my heart. Kind of relive that with my kids and our families. We go on a semi-annual trip to Lake Powell. We kind of have.
Have you lately though? Isn't it really low?
Yeah, we went. Well, let's see. We went last year. We had a trip 2 years ago. We went. We had a trip planned this year, and then there was a baby boom in my family for this summer. So that put a wrench in this year's plan. But yeah, we've gone when water levels have been really low. We've gone when they've been way up. But lately they've been up.
Okay.
So yeah, the last time we went, it was a market improvement from you know, I think it was 2020. We went. We did miss 1 year during COVID. We skipped it because there was only one boat ramp left open. But you know, it's the most beautiful place on earth, but you take the water out of it and it's probably the most unforgiving place on earth.
Correct.
Like it's truly brutal down there without the water. But my mom and dad, I mean, they saw it get filled. You know, they saw the construction of the Glen Canyon Dam.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when they were younger, the water level was really low because it was filling.
Yeah. My dad was a big water skier, I think, in his youth. I never knew him to do water sports. I mean, he had us a little bit later in life. And I think by the time you have three kids and we were in Los Angeles, we didn't do that kind of stuff. But he was a big water skier and big downhill skier too. And so he talks about Lake Powell, that was where him and his cousins went all the time.
Oh, man.
And then I went for the first time, I was maybe in sixth or seventh grade. I had a good friend whose family vacationed there every summer, and that's what they did. So she was like, you want to come? And so that's where I learned how to ski.
Oh, good for you.
Not well. By the end, I could get up on one ski, which was fine, but it was like, I could tell they were all so frustrated because we'd go out first thing in the morning and it was just glass. And they're like, all right, Jamie, your turn. And you could see everyone in the boat.
And you're just
like,
wasting all the glass.
I'm wasting all the glass on this.
That is true. I'm not going to say you were wrong.
I know. And so at least I had enough a wherewithal about myself, even at 10 or 11, to be like, maybe this isn't the time. Maybe if I want to learn, like take me out at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And if it's choppy, great. If I can learn how to ski on choppy water, then I can ski.
I'll tell you, there's nothing more rewarding though as like an uncle or a parent to see
get
a
up
kid
for the first
get up.
Time?
Oh, better than doing it yourself. Yeah, it's the most amazing thing.
Oh, it is. So now I've given up on the skiing. I just wakeboard and that's an easy up down. And we're actually at Chatfield often. I mean, it's hard to wakeboard there. You can't do it on the weekends. One of the years was the year that it flooded, which was great because no one else could get on unless you
just
were
got to watch for logs.
You did that. Someone was on log watch, but I was like, oh, this is great. And you could actually go around like two or three times before you had to worry about anybody. But
yeah, we used to go to Chatfield when I was in high school. My stepdad and mom had a boat, and but you'd have to get out of that lake by 10 or else it was just, correct, you know, the
it's choppy, like a bathtub, and it's, yeah, just exactly, a, there's nowhere for it to go.
But you get out there at 6 a.m., you put, mm-hmm, a wetsuit on because the water's, mm-hmm, always cold.
Yep.
Yeah. And you kind of have the place to yourself. Yeah. Back in those days, now I get out there and there's no time.
No, we do maybe one lap just, yeah, to feel like we're on a boat. And then we just, yeah, go down to the far side and drop anchor and,
yeah,
hang out on the boat. And so it's like not really the boating that we had like at Shasta or Tahoe or Powell, right, you know. I just love being out on the water. So it's something to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially for someone that doesn't own a boat. I, yeah, got a buddy that has a boat that wants to do that. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. No, growing up in Colorado, you know, golf was a big thing in our family. Boating, obviously. Yeah. Camping. We camped a lot when the kids were younger. But now it's basically just being in sports, gyms for wrestling. Yeah,
exactly.
We're indoors people now.
Yeah, so, the transition to becoming sport parents. Yeah. So my wife is the softball coach here. And so I call all of the games. So this weekend we had a really big series. And so we were playing CCU's 1 and 2 in conference. And what was the coolest thing? I mean, the softball was great and girls did a really good job. But the coolest thing is one of our alums, her dad came with her this weekend. Mm. And so I was like, hey, so I was chatting with him because he's a big softball fan and just, okay, all, you know, the guy that just, it was his life, I'm sure, because that's what he did with his daughter for 18 years, right, you know? And so as
he
she
knew
walked,
all the stats of the other teams and all, yeah, all the girls batting average.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. So I'll have so many parents come up to, right, me all the time. I'm like, oh, did you watch the Mesa Regis game? I'm like, no. Like
you have to have recall for every girl who's played.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I didn't watch another team's games. I'll care about them when they play us, right, and I have to learn their stats. Right. But it was really cute because Maddie walked away and her dad and I were just chatting. And I just kind of said, I was like, how are you doing? And he was like, this is really tough. Like, he had 3 kids, all of them played sports all the way, some of them through college. He's like, and now everybody's done. And like, I don't know what to do with myself, right, on weekends. So start prepping for that now.
Yeah. No, I'm trying not to even think about that.
I know.
Yeah.
You're going to just be that creepy dad that still shows up, yeah, places and knows, right, all the stats. And they're like, who's that guy?
I will probably be that guy for a little while. Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Right? It's one of those things. It's such a, obviously having a kid involved, you know, a dog in the fight, mm-hmm, right? And it's really easy to root, but you get to know the other kids,
yeah,
and even the kids on other teams. Cause you do, you like as a dad, I think every dad does it. You, mm-hmm, look, your kid's in a bracket, you're, mm-hmm, looking up the other kids, oh, in that, yeah, bracket. Oh, yeah. Now you start to recognize these names and then you know, you actually get to interact with them. You're like, oh, like that kid's famous.
Yeah.
Probably famous only in like, you know, our family
this
circle.
Little tiny circle, yeah, but everybody knows their name. 125
pound division or whatever. Yeah. But yeah. And then you root for those kids too,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I realized too, with the parents, especially I think of the college kids, they become friends because from, yeah, February till May, they're every weekend together. And so you start to see these really cool friendships build across people that maybe otherwise wouldn't have,
right,
crossed paths.
Yeah. My oldest came down for the state championship and yeah, just seeing her interact with people she had, mm-hmm, wrestled and cheering those people on. Mm-hmm. There was a girl, McKenna Heston, who was the last match my daughter had at state. She lost to McKenna, and then McKenna goes on to win state this year, right? So
cool.
Lily was, mm-hmm, you know, cheering her on. And
yeah.
I think they had wrestled each other, you know, 3 or 4 times,
sure,
for their career. Kind of a rival, right? Mm-hmm. But that stuff is like forged in fire.
Oh, it is.
You know, those relationships.
I can still tell you. So I mean, cool. I'm 25 years out of college, but I can still tell you like the kids that I competed against in college. And I'm like, oh, and I can tell you probably, right, where to pitch them because I was a catcher too. Like,
yep, yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And it's just, you know, these kids and you get to know them for so long. And it's a very cool thing. I think sports does so many cool things, yeah, like that. And that are so much more intangible than just the learning how to win and lose. There's so many other things that are so productive.
Right. Yeah.
I love it. So anyhow, you get to Denver in the late 80s. You never got snatched, turns out.
Never got snatched, no.
So why MSU Denver?
Well, I was like the long way through college, right? The 8-year undergrad, sure, program. Wasn't quite sure exactly what I wanted to do. I was passionate about, you know, something and then I wouldn't be passionate about it again.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, my son is a lot the same. It's like you do something, you do it all in, and then when you get bored with that, you got to find something else to go all in on. It's not like you can just, you, yeah, know, go in and out of these things. So yeah, I changed majors like 6-7 times. I went initially out of school. I worked, went down to Adams State, kind of, mm-hmm, following a girlfriend at the time and did really well down there. And then she went to CSU. So I transferred to CSU. And then CSU was just too many friends, too much fun, more,
sure,
college than school. And,
sure,
you know, dropped out of CSU and went to work. I was doing door-to-door sales. I'd done door-to-door sales when I was 15, selling the Denver Post newspaper,
sure,
subscription is like the only thing I could get without being 16 and,
yeah,
had a work permit or whatever. So I went back to that, just kind of knowing personal selling as an avenue of being able to, you know, feed myself. And so I did that. And I happened to meet my wife through my mom, introduced us. Actually, my mom was a para at an elementary school. Mm-hmm. I had a half brother and sister at that same elementary school, and met Cindy, my wife, through my mom. And actually, kind of the funny story we told at our wedding was how my sister, who was in fifth grade, Cindy was a fourth grade teacher. My brother Vince was in third grade, and my mom was a para. It actually ended up being Kinsey asking her out.
For me. So
she was like insisting that, hey, you should go out with Miss Tucker. Like, she's really awesome. So anyways, you know, if mom recommends her, you know, obviously she fits the bill. So
Sure. Yeah,
we fell in love real quick and all that. But one of the stipulations was she's not going to marry me without a college degree. So, you know, I'd already been out of school for a couple of years and, you know, had really no intention of going back. I just thought, okay, I'll just work and kind of do my thing.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people without, like my dad, like, yeah, you know, no college degree, and just used personal selling to kind of move through life and succeed. So I had no intention of really going back, but I had every intention of marrying her. So went back, focused on a marketing degree. Yeah. And actually it was like the best thing because it just refocused me on what I wanted to do with my life overall. So much like a lot of other MSU students, I went to a college or two first, had life kind of happen, and then found a perfect avenue where I could continue my studies, be able to work. It wasn't going to cost me an arm and a leg. I was paying for it all myself. Yeah, it was just some of the best connections I met. I still am in touch with some of the professors, Clay Doherty, Nancy Fronczak, Mick Jakowski, who is a really good friend of mine. I used to play poker with him quite often. Yeah. So it was like just the perfect fit for me at the time. And I think, you know, that's kind of what college comes down to for most people is, if you're in, everyone else around you at that university is usually in with you,
yeah,
right? If you're not in, like, it's pretty apparent. And, and that's when you kind of feel isolated. So when I came to MSU for the first time, I was ready to go. And it just seemed like all these doors opened up and I learned so much. And I was ready for it as much as, you know, it was ready for me, I guess.
I love that. I think about it in terms of autonomy that we have as people to make decisions of, like, either I'm going to show up, but obviously a degree was what your end result was at the moment because you needed to get married.
Right.
So like, exactly. Okay, it's a degree. But when you came in with the mindset to be like, no, like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be all in and I'm going to make this worth the time and the money and the effort and the sacrifice in some cases, you know, that I'm going to have right. to do in this space, you see everyone around you rally that. People, I think, often sometimes forget or expect that everyone's going to do the motivating or the inspiration for you. And it's like, no, you got to come in with your game face on, and then everyone else is going to read off of you and give you that same energy back.
I think that's, I don't know, it's almost like the blueprint for the MSU student.
Yeah.
I did a couple of like panels where I've been able to interact with some students along the way. And yeah, just the enthusiasm. I guess if you're at a panel and it's not a required class, you're probably already enthusiastic.
Sure.
But yeah, just in talking with people that I meet, and it is funny, whenever I wear my MSU shirt, just the other day on one of our projects, the painter was like, you went to MSU? You're like, I went to MSU. And you know, you strike up that conversation. Yeah. It's usually somebody who is hustling, not afraid of hard work, roll up their sleeves, you know, wherever they've landed in life. It's kind of like the blueprint for what an MSU student is. I can't even remember who told me what this phrase, but I've always loved it. It was when I was in school, I heard it. I don't even know who to attribute it to. It's certainly not one that I made up, but the student body was, you know, referred to as the rumbling herd from the lower third.
Oh, I'd never heard that.
And I was like, it's like a rumbling herd, you know, in life itself. But I think it originated from no lights on Colfax or like crosswalks on Colfax. So they would team together to get across the street when
Fair
classes
enough.
Were about
yeah,
to
you're
begin.
You're not going to hit five people. You might hit one.
Right.
You're
yeah,
not gonna hit five.
Exactly. So the rumbling herd would go through and you'd be able to get across. So I've always kind of had that hustling, that roadrunner, that mindset of who is an MSU student is. For me, anytime I hear somebody went to MSU, it's usually coupled with some kind of story and, you know, hustling mindset of how they're approaching life.
I couldn't agree more. We've had, I mean, I don't know, 20 some odd guests on this podcast. And obviously I've been in this role for almost 12 years now. So I've met a lot of alums along the way. And it is very true. And it's very consistent that for our alums that are successful and that want to, are at that point in their career too, where they want to give back and they realize how special this was, it is consistent across all of them to say, yep, I'm here. And when I was here, it meant something. And so now I want to make sure it means something to someone else. And so there is just that grit and that, I don't know, it's unique. It's unlike any other institution I've ever worked at.
Yeah, that's leading us to what we were talking about or what we're here to talk about. Mainly when I met Matt Campbell, I met him in the industry and in the construction architecture, engineering, and construction industry, and we were both business development guys. But yeah, like that, you know, meeting somebody, like I can almost tell or have a good idea of, like, were you at MSU? Or it wouldn't surprise me if this guy was at MSU. Like, he was one of those guys where you just, there's just something about it. It's almost like blue collar-ish people that are willing to roll up the sleeves, and they tend to hustle and work a little bit harder. And I think for me, it was just the lot in life where I was, right? I had to work hard. Like, if I wanted anything out of it, I had to work hard. And I don't know, I can relate to that with people. But when Matt passed away, that connection to MSU was something that we shared and talked about often, and kind of laughed about the rumble and herd kind of mentality. And others that have passed in my circle of friends or loved ones of theirs that have passed, or we've done like golf tournaments or poker tournaments and things like that. And it was one of those situations where I was trying to honor, I wanted to do something to honor my friend. I was very heartbroken. Yeah, he'd passed away from suicide, and it was, it affected, you know, our community in the AEC industry very deeply. He was well-loved, well-liked, and it just left this huge hole. And so I don't want his name to be forgotten.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to take away from what other people have done for others, you know, that are close to them as well. And I thought, you know, scholarship is something that, especially at a place like this, it's almost like a second chance place, or rewarding people who are bootstrapping their way, which is something that he and I both valued tremendously. And, you know, that coupled with his love for the architecture, engineering, construction industry, especially SMPS, which is an organization, the Society of Marketing Professionals. But SMPS is their local Colorado chapter. Matt was the president. I think it was in 2014. He was very involved in that organization. I was for a period of time as well, but he was very well known, very well liked in that organization. And so kind of had this genesis moment of a good way to honor him would be to start a scholarship with people around him that wanted to do something as well, and maybe just be the facilitator of that, give an outlet of some way to kind of show your appreciation for him or give back or show his family, you know, something. I felt like that could just be a vehicle for a lot of people that were just like me, that were hurting from losing such a close friend. And then also a way to expose Metro students who have that hustle mentality and do look outside the box, give them a way, an avenue to find this industry that meant so much to me and him and others. And honestly, like going back to when I first started here, I was working in that industry as a marketing coordinator, marketing business development guy for a mechanical engineering company in Lakewood. So I was working, going to school. And one of the things I noticed is there were like no marketing students or personal selling students. I don't think they had that major here yet, but in Metro, like nobody even knew what that industry was, the architecture, engineering, and construction industry. And I'm looking around at the time, this was like 2002 to 2005, and there was like ample work and a big need for marketing coordinators, people who could put proposals together, some graphic design, sell business to business, promote goods and services, mainly services from like engineering and architecture. Yeah. And I'm like, there's no colleagues at MSU that are in this industry. No one's at SMPS. We didn't have a student chapter. And so I ended up connecting with this guy, Jason Pettigrew from Slater Paul, who was the young AIA president. So AIA is the affiliation for architects, the American Institute of Architects. And then they have a youth organization for like college students coming out that they would mentor, give them a student membership, have networking events and stuff like that. So I'm like, maybe we can join forces.
Yeah,
I can recruit marketing students somehow. Also figure out like how is he getting these students involved in an organization that doesn't necessarily hire them, but it's like a way to network. Like what's important? And so Jason and I had met a couple of times, and we're just kind of getting like a concept, you know, to where we can jointly get an associate membership or something like that, where I could start to interact with those folks and maybe get to know that world a little bit better. And unfortunately, he passed away. He died in a mountain climbing accident.
Oh, geez.
This was like while I was in school, and just, I guess like, I don't know, maybe like a year or something before I graduated. I wasn't able to put all that together, but it was something that I always kind of kept in the back of my mind, was like that outreach thing. And, you know, he's another person that passed too soon. And I believe Slater Paul still has a scholarship for him as well. Very cool. That was a little bit of an inspiration to me as well, as I thought about Jason's, I think there's an award that they give out. But I remember kind of digging back into that and seeing that that was a way that they had honored his memory as well, is through scholarship and furthering education and all that. So that's a long way to get back to what the purpose of this scholarship is to get an awareness, which nothing gets you more aware than money, right? If you win a scholarship of this industry. And there's not a real way for us to tie in that SNPS membership with the scholarship itself. So we've had recipients here, I think three or four over the last year. I think one recipient received it twice. All very qualified, and I'm so grateful that we've been able to provide that scholarship. But the one thing that's been underutilized is with our scholarship, SNPS, their Colorado chapter, provides a free membership for that student recipient to their organization. And what that organization is, and what it did for me, and what it did for Campbell as well, you get to interact with owners of companies, marketing professionals, people that are in the role that you're looking to come out of college to take over their job so that they can get promoted.
Right.
And there's just an ample amount of these opportunities out there. Things get constructed, things get renovated, things get built. In 2008, 2012, public work became more prevalent. When private work went away, it was more GSA opportunities, Corps of Engineer opportunities, federal justice centers, things like that. And that ebbs and flows. But what's constant is the need for buildings to be maintained, upgraded, things like that. So it's one of those industries, if we could somehow get the student chapter to grow, which I know they have outreach to MSU as well from within the SNPS organization, but that was something that was near and dear to my heart in creating this scholarship, was to provide students an opportunity to get their education paid for here at MSU in the name of Matt Campbell to help grow another generation and have at least somebody, at least one person at this school read his bio as they submit an essay and just know who that guy was. So hopefully that continues forever.
MSU Denver serves one of the most diverse groups of higher education students in the state, and we are committed to meeting our students wherever they are. One of the ways we do this is through scholarships and financial support. The Matthew P. Campbell Scholarship is just one of over 350 scholarships available to our students. To learn more and make a donation, visit msudenver.edu/giving. This episode is brought to you by The Owl. Okay, that bird joke flew right over your head.
That was really the big reason I wanted to come and talk today is just to kind of get a little bit more awareness of that scholarship. And that scholarship's available right now. And we could certainly tweak it. And we've talked about it, tweaking it a little bit. But as of now, it's juniors and seniors, 3.0 or higher, and in the communications, personal selling, or marketing majors. So like
half the university.
Right, yeah. Apply.
I love that you were so thoughtful in this. And I think about the times in my life when I've experienced loss, I typically have like one of two reactions. One is either like I just go fully internal, shut off the world, and I'm going to focus on the things that are right in front of me and I'm not going to try and think about things. Or there's been times where I think as I've grown in my emotional maturity to be like, okay, yes, and how can we make something of this so that there is at least some good that's coming out of this really tragic situation? And I love that you chose a route that was so intentional to make sure that you were accomplishing multiple things and doing it in memory and in celebration of somebody that you cared so deeply for. And the fact that you and Matt Campbell both had a shared love of this institution and the profession, I think you crafted an absolutely perfect scholarship that is doing those things that you wanted to do. We're acknowledging people are having to read and hear about and learn about Matt and his impact into the industry, in his communities and his family and all of that. And you're providing a path and an avenue for future success that people are going to look back and say, oh, I got here. Hopefully they're on my podcast in 10 years. Right. And they say, oh no, it all started because I got this Matt Campbell scholarship. And then it gave me introduction into this organization. That's how I got my first job. And so there's so many things that can live on in perpetuity through this. And I think it was fantastic that you were so intentional in that time to do that. And you're seeing it play out with the students that you've already awarded, not to mention the ones that will continue to be awarded.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I owe a huge amount of thanks and also a tribute forming this thing to Nicole Fatchaline. She was the See, this was all like done during COVID. So a lot of it was online. And I think she was the president of S&PS at the time for the Colorado chapter. If not, she was like the outgoing, but I think she got renewed because of the weirdness around COVID or whatever. Yeah. Nicole, I reached out to, she was also very close to Matt and she helped me with that S&PS component because she's the expert at that. And so, yeah, I owe a lot to her, especially from the initial event that we had where we rented out Mile High Spirits, which, you know, Matt was the unique thing about him was that the guy taught me how to just be myself more in business. And I tried to make that come through a little bit as well in the scholarship. You know, Matt would show up to business meetings in like an anthrax shirt, like a, you know, sometimes with a sport coat on if it was a fancy event.
Sure.
But just unique in his, like he was introverted, but an introverted extrovert. He was extroverted when he needed to be. He was a musician, right? And so like a lot of musicians, when you talk with them one-on-one, they're a little bit more shy than you would anticipate. But like he was a lead singer in
a
country band.
When you go out on stage and
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He started a band called Red Whiskey Blue with some of the other folks in the industry, you know, a landscape architect, a fire safety guy. Like, and then he was the lead singer, guitar player, singing, you know, Johnny Cash songs and, you know, Merle Haggard and stuff like that. And so he'd go to industry events with an Anthrax or Megadeth shirt on, sing country songs in front of people that he was going to network with and, you know, ask for business. Like, that's so unique.
Yeah.
It's living life your own way. And then you talk with him and you expect this guy to be boisterous and life the party.
In your face,
actually, so, he's very like shy. We really got to know Matt. You realize how shy he actually was. Like, I learned a lot from that. You know, we were same age, but I took a lot from that. Half of my network that I had as a business development guy, which is really all that your job really is to know what's going on in your town, chase opportunities that are specific and linked to your company that employs you, and then have a network of people that you can call on, not only just for your own benefit, but for somebody else who might need something. You know, be that kind of clearinghouse for information. Hey, do you know anybody that would be able to do this? And have, you know, a Rolodex like that. So that's what people lean on a business development guy for. And half the people I knew in this town were introduced to me by Matt. Okay. And the other half he knew were introduced to him by me. We never really worked for each other. He worked at CTL Thompson when I met him, which was environmental engineering and geotechnical and all that. And I worked for a mechanical electrical company. So like the building had to be pretty much like designed and ready to go when we're involved. And it's not even like designed yet. It's just dirt trying to figure out what's under the soil when he's involved. So we didn't have any real direct connection. And that was the other thing too, is just seeing how willing he was to help me.
Yeah.
Even though he had no direct benefit, it wasn't going to pay his bills, but he would go out of his way and call me just to see if there was anything I needed. And the thank you notes that he would send and things like that. Just, I learned a lot just about his style and his grace and how he did things. So that's something too, that I hope, you know, kind of came through. And and his mom, Linda Coulson, she wrote the kind of the bio.
Yeah.
And she's an author and just a wonderful woman and so instrumental in putting this thing together too. She was the very first call when the concept came about. I called her first just to see if it was okay if we did something in her son's name, and she couldn't have been more supportive and the biggest, you know, sponsor and donor of the endowment. And just a labor of love there to get all that stuff done. And it wasn't easy either, because the moment I called her and made that commitment and started working things out with Nicole, my own mom passed away in a car accident in January of 21. Yeah. So all the momentum that we had, we were just about to get docs for the scholarship from Alyssa Joseph, who was here previously. Actually, had just emailed her that morning and then found out later that afternoon that my mom had passed. So took all the wind out of the sails of this. And I honestly didn't think I was going to pick it back up. I was so heartbroken and everything was just on pause. I was like, you're underwater, right? When you lose somebody that close. And it wasn't till like March. So that was January when she passed. It was March. And I made a commitment to Matt's mom and I made a commitment to him and I needed to pick that back up and get it rolling again. So glad I did. By August that year, we had the first fundraiser. It was just so well attended. It was like a family reunion of people in Denver.
And you do you do an annual concert for it too,
We were, it got a little busy. Did two of them. And honestly, I wasn't able to pick it back up. I had a lot of crazy, you know, personal things kind of going on and kids graduating and stuff like that. The good thing is we raised enough to
it's endowed now.
Hopefully have this endowment last. Yes. And that's the thing too, is it wasn't necessarily about how many times can we get into everybody's pockets. It was more like, can we celebrate Matt and put something together that lasts? And yeah, so now we're kind of reaching this 2.0 version of like, what do we want this to look like? Because the biggest thing was just not to forget Matt's name, not necessarily to make everybody feel like they owed a donation every year or whatever. Sure. So yeah, we're kind of figuring out what phase two looks like on the endowment.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, Linda subsequently came to MSU Denver afterwards, earned a degree in history, and now participates, as you mentioned, she's an author. We have a Roadrunners Book Fair where we kind of promote all of our roadrunners out there that have written books. Come and have this great community. And it is probably our best attended event.
Have you met her? Have you?
I have.
Okay.
And so
yeah.
Brandy and I have both met her at through the book fair. She also participates in kind of our, like we have this author's shelf, you know, like bookshelf that kind of is virtual. But it's very cool because I always think to myself when I picture book fair, I think back to the 80s and, you know, having your piece of paper you filled out.
The Scholastic book fair.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you get your cool posters. It's where I got my NASA poster and I got some other poster.
There are a few things I've been more excited about in my life than when the Scholastic book fair had the books out.
Yeah. 100%. And so when Brady and I, we're all about the same age, you know, in our 40s. And so we're like, oh my God, we want to bring this back.
Yeah.
And I was like, can we
That's
please
so cool.
have like a number two pencil in the things that we're going to mark? And so it isn't quite that, but it was fascinating to see all the people that are our age and a little bit older that had those kind of key experiences as kids. Our book fair, I think we had 30 some odd vendors this year. So that's 30 alumni that have written a book in some way that just want to come and table.
Cool.
And then people just come and you see the authors going to each other's tables and picking up their books and buying them and sharing and just having these great stories. And Linda has been a big part of that. And so it's been cool to see that full.
She's incredible. Before I even met her, I read Searching for Red Feather, which is a book that it just has all these Denver, like straight Denver connections. It's almost like a biography of what growing up in and around the North Denver community in the 90s and early 2000s. It's, you know, the bar Ziggy's is in there.
Yeah.
Actually, the way when Matt and I met was at a networking event and I was still in school, like one of the first leads groups. Mm-hmm. So like a leads group is where you get together with other professionals who are business development or marketing or whatever. You share information on projects, nothing that's like proprietary to your company, but like, hey, I heard about this project here. It doesn't necessarily fit us or it might fit us down the road, but oh, you're a geotech guy. Maybe this is somebody you want to call. Here's a name and number.
Yeah.
So one of those things, the very first one I did, and he was at this one. I was brought by Jane Paul. So actually Jane Paul was the person that essentially introduced me to Matt Campbell,
yeah,
which then
very cool.
introduced me to like the whole community. Yeah, he and I are sitting talking, and I forget how it even came up, but I mentioned that I have a friend that played in the Groove Hogs, which was Lewis and Floorwax, the Denver disc jockeys on 103.5 The Fox. It was their band. They had a blues band called the Groove Hogs, and my friend Mike Hornbuckle was one of the guitarists. Him and his brother Brian Hornbuckle both played in the band. And like last name Hornbuckle is pretty distinct.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're going to know.
You hear it once.
You know whether you know the Hornbuckles or
so
not.
So I said, I had a friend that played in the Groove Hogs and he's like, oh, who's your friend? I said, Mike Hornbuckle. And he goes, oh, I grew up with Mike Hornbuckle. I'm like, huh. And so like just knowing Mike Hornbuckle and how outside of, especially that time, like how outside the industry he was living life. I'm like, okay, let's just table that, talk about it after this meeting outside of earshot of all these new people that I just met, business professionals. And so, yeah, we ended up talking afterwards and find out he grew up on the same street as Mike in North Denver. And so Linda's book, Looking for Red Feather, I think is a lot of Matt in there. And I don't know if she's told me that or if I just kind of gleaned that from the book. But like, I think that's Campbell. Mm-hmm. It feels like that's who that character is. Maybe it's an amalgam of her three sons or something. But anyway, the references to like Ziggy's Bar, like Mike and his dad, like his dad was the blues jam guy on Sundays at Ziggy's forever. It was like a bar on 38th, I think, 38th, over by the old Elitch's.
Yeah, yeah.
All these straight references to the North Denver scene and all that. It was just kind of full circle. So in reading her book, even before Matt gave me a copy of it, I felt a super deep connection to her as well, because she's kind of describing things that I knew outside of Matt as well. And growing up with Mike and because I met Mike when I was 16 and we became best friends like instantaneously as well, much like, you know, with Campbell. So anyway, just a lot of really cool, deep Denver connections and the fact that she's still involved in MSU, and it's such a cool network. It's such a cool community down here. And I'm glad that she's part of that and invited to it.
Yeah, it's very cool because lifelong nurse. And so already had a degree, done all that, and then just came back and got a history degree. I've actually gifted her wineries, Colorado wineries book to a handful of friends that move out here. I'm always like, oh, here's a great, if I know, because I'm not a big wine person. I'm more a whiskey beer gal.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, but I know that there's good and bad places and good and bad wines, and especially what happens over kind of on the Western Slope, it's a different type of wine. Right. So like, I'm just like, here's the guide. That's as good
she's
as
she's a Renaissance
I can
woman. I mean, her she and is. Her husband, Bob, like they met skydiving. Like she's, yeah. And I think they just did a documentary on skydiving.
That's
and
incredible.
Yeah, they're about the most two fascinating people I know.
Like, I know.
She's the most interesting woman in the world.
And
right?
That makes for a great author, right?
It
when
does.
You can incorporate
yeah.
a lot of that stuff. There's books I've read too. In fact, there's one and I couldn't tell you who wrote it or what the title was. I read it about 3 years ago. But the reason I bought it is because it was an author that was an alumnus of my institution. I went to UC San Diego and they wrote it similarly, like it was a story, but like you could tell it happened on campus.
Right.
Like even though it was like some things aren't quite there. And so it was so cool just to be able to be 20 plus years removed, open this book and all of a sudden be like 18 again and be like, oh my God, I've studied in the Geisel Library and I've walked the snake path and I've done this.
Yeah.
And again, I couldn't even tell you what the book was really about. I mean, it was kind of a mystery thing, but it was just so cool to have that moment where you could read some pages and be transported because it felt like it knew who
the
you
direct
were.
Direct reference to those buildings and
Correct.
Facilities and all that. Yeah.
Where it's like, oh yeah, I've been there. I've done that. So
it just transported me. Like I knew what it felt like outside of that bar.
Yeah,
like 100%. I know what the parking lot
you know what it
like.
Smells like.
I know what it smells
exactly.
like. Right. I know there's a broken pool table in the back. Like
100%.
Yeah. You just, that one word just put 1,000 words in your head.
100%.
Yeah, it was such a cool way for her to utilize that, especially for the people in Denver. I don't know how that plays with people that don't have the
reference. Probably just read it like everything else.
Yeah, right.
But
it's just the name of a bar. But that was really one of the most vivid books, and I got a real good understanding. And then I actually ran into her. First time I met her was running into her at a Turnpike Troubadours concert at Red Rocks, a band that I had introduced Campbell to.
Oh, cool.
Just randomly ran into him and his mom at the concert.
So at least you know he took your advice seriously.
Yeah.
This is rad.
It was funny. I used to make him CDs. I did this for a lot of friends. Like I was like a middle school boyfriend.
Oh,
for
I was
a lot
totally.
Of my buddies.
I even threw. It was probably 2008 or 9. Like MP3s were still a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I was still burning my fall CD, and I had a list that had grown to like almost 75 people that I was mailing CDs to. While I'm in my apartment making $8,000 a year, you know.
So everyone needs to know.
But
this
everyone
music.
Needs to know this. This is the music. This is the fall. And it was always my fall playlist. And that's where it was. And I still have a colleague that I'd met probably in 2005. She now lives in Ohio and, you know, her kids are grown. And every fall she's like, are we getting a playlist? And
that's
I'm like,
awesome.
Oh, I haven't done that in years, Beth. But there's part of me that wants to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure now it'd be so easy that I could make it on Spotify and just share it with people. But it doesn't feel the same as the burden of like having to burn that CD and then get my Sharpie out and, you know, call it that fancy, clever name that I thought of and then giving you all the lists.
Well, as a marketing student, I would have to then put some Photoshop or
100%,
InDesign together. I had to make an album cover.
Oh,
right.
That's awesome.
There's a Christmas CD out there that get sometimes I'll get a photo of, hey, just put your Christmas CD on.
That's perfect.
But those are fewer and further between because I don't even know anybody that even owns a CD player.
I don't have one anymore. I could tell
I have a lot of CDs though. I just made a mousetrap car with my son.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the only use for these old, you know, CDRs are wheels on this mousetrap car.
I just came across my like binders, you know, the old portfolios of things. This is, again, probably going to make me totally the Gen Xer that I am. But I was looking for a cable. And I was like, oh, let me go into my tub of cables that
I
have.
Because you can never throw those away.
Because you can't.
They're treasures.
You can't. You don't know when you're going to need what you're going to need. And so I'm sure I was digging through there. And sure enough, like all of my CD cases were in there. And so then my wife comes downstairs and I'm just sitting on the floor in the basement, flipping these CDs. She's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm just going down memory lane.
Yeah.
And then even trying to remember to myself, like, why did I put them in this order? Because I know there was orders.
And I bet you didn't throw those cables away when you put
everything back. I sure didn't. I mean, there are cables there that charge my BlackBerry from 2000 and whatever. I still have my pager from high school because I can't throw that away.
No.
So
it might come back.
It's absurd. But every once in a while, I do have that moment where like, because I'm also that way, like I build a lot of things. I've got a wood shop in my garage and I will save every piece of scrap lumber and it drives my wife insane. And then every once in a while, she'll be like, I don't know. I just need something that's like 6 inches taller for whatever. I was like, I got it. And I'll just be digging through my scrap lumber. I'm like,
dowel,
this is exactly what you need, right?
Yeah. So I know.
It comes
same
in
way.
Handy. But same thing with like a cable. Every once in a while, I'm like, I'm sure I could rig this to that. And I was like, I know what I've got. And I just walk out with some piece of electronics. And she's like, why do you have that? And I was like, for this exact moment.
That's so right? funny.
Like, it's my dad was that way. I'm that way. And it's just something that's never going to change. So there's always going to be a portion of our basement or garage that is just things that I will not touch for 10 or 15 years, but when I do, man, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. If I ever need to hook up an Atari, you know, to an old television, I have that.
100%.
I have that part.
I'm glad to know that there's a kindred spirit out there that saves all that shit too.
Yeah. I'm gonna just now I'm thinking of all the chords I've got.
I know. Yeah. And it's so many. And I mean, even just like things that I will never use, but my yeah. God, I'm gonna keep them. And my like iPhone boxes, every iPhone I've ever had, right. Like, oh, gotta keep oh, yeah. the box.
Just in case. Don't even know
what?
Where the phone is, but you know where
correct.
The box is.
Phone is long gone, the same but way. When I got the box, so yeah. It's just absurd. But I love that. I love that you made CDs, and I love that you had a run-in at Red Rocks with Matt and Linda. That's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Matt, also an alum, but you didn't know him when he was here, right?
I didn't
meet him until the industry.
No.
So you've kind of gathered, though, some roadrunners along the way, even in kind of your storytelling. Like, you just kind of, it's almost like you make eye contact, and you're like, you went there.
Right.
You're doing the same stuff. You're hustling. You're grit. And so there's this trust that is kind of unspoken that I think you've really leveraged in your career and in your relationships, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, the school definitely put a stamp on my heart for sure. I don't know. Very proud. Just walking down here today and seeing, you know, all the logos and mm-hmm. MSU Denver stuff. One of my cars that the kids drive has the Metro State License College plate. Of Denver. Yeah, yeah, the old college one. So. Yeah, it's just a very cool school with not a lot of pretension. Yeah, there's just something about Metro and just the folks that you tend to interact with that are all kind of cut from the same cloth, yep. you know, no matter race, nationality, orientation, whatever. It's like there's like a thread that runs through. And when I hear somebody went to Metro, it tends to put them up a notch or two.
I yeah. love it. I love it. What else do you want to talk about?
Really just want, like I said, wanted to get the word out yeah. To all marketing personal selling and communication majors. If you're a junior or going into your junior year or senior year, please apply to the scholarship, reach out. Always happy to connect with students and
oh, yeah.
see where I can help. If there's questions, especially about like the SNPS program and all that, I would love to. If it's just one person, mm-hmm. I would love to be able to extend that invitation. I'll attend the first SNPS event with you and introduce you to some folks, because it is intimidating to go into a room full of professionals when you're a college student. I had that experience myself directly. I mean, the big reason for wanting to come down and talk today was so that we could get some person mm-hmm. to take advantage of that opportunity, because it's an industry that's near and dear to my heart. You know, it was near and dear to Matt's heart, and having that opportunity, we haven't had anybody take us up on it yet.
Yeah.
So to have that go unused year in, year out, it's hard to see, because yeah. I know that somewhere there's somebody who's not getting promoted because there's not an MSU student coming to take their job. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So hopefully that word gets out and yeah, I just appreciate the platform to be able to talk about that.
Well, it's a incredible thing that you've done. Sounds like Matt Campbell was an incredible dude. He's very lucky to have friends and community and family members like you and Linda and everyone else that has been a part of this to keep not only his memory going, but to make sure that we're in a situation where we can kind of use that to propagate the next round of MSU Denver students that want to be taking those people's jobs. So,
no,
so
thank
this is
you.
Super awesome.
Really appreciate that.
Cool. Okay. We finish all of our podcasts with three rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So I just want what your answers are.
Oh, great.
If you can read upside down, you've been reading them this whole time.
Okay. I have not yet.
That's right. All right. What is your favorite MSU Denver memory?
Oh, man. I would say favorite memory would be selling water bottles and carabiners in Mick Jackowski's class, because it felt like I was just right back into door-to-door sales, and we had to go hustle these, you know, bottles and carabiners that I think we selected that as our thing. And it was just like competitive mindset and all that. So it just brought something out of me that I didn't think was still kind of going. And
yeah.
and then, yeah, it just made me kind of closer to that guy. So
cool.
I'd say that's probably my favorite one.
Very cool. All right. What does it mean to you to be a roadrunner?
For me, it means that I accomplished my college degree, set a good example for my kids and all that, you know, personally. But I think what it means, just the way I look at roadrunners, is that you're somebody that hustles, not afraid of hard work, probably have an interesting story as to what brought you to MSU. You know, somebody who certainly bootstrapped themselves and if not, can appreciate that kind of a mindset.
Yeah, I love that. All right, last one. If you could put a billboard on campus with a piece of advice for all students to see, what would it say?
Geez, that is a good one. A billboard with a piece of advice. I just say keep running, right?
I love it. It's true.
Tagline.
It should be. I know. Run is such a fun thing to be able to play with. Like, you know, we run the city, you know,
right.
all this kind of stuff. But Keep Running is about as simple as it gets.
Yeah.
Because I think it hits on a lot of the stuff, even your personal story, I think, as with many of our students and alums, that there's a lot of things that can easily stop you if you let it.
Right.
And so you just got to keep going.
Yeah, it's back to wrestling, right? Yep. It's not about the wins or losses or the points. It's getting back up and going back in. So that's, I think, that MSU mentality is it's not about the wins and losses. It's about, you know, doing the right thing and completing the task.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, Matt, this was awesome, and I'm glad we got to spend some time to really kind of shine a light on Matt Campbell, the scholarship that you guys have all created, and opportunities I think that it's presenting for a lot of marketing students, communication students, and we got to get somebody to take advantage of
the SMPS.
Because that sounds really
membership.
Cool.
Membership, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah, if anybody wants to reach out, happy to point them in the right direction with that, too, and fingers crossed we get somebody to take advantage of it this next time.
Oh, they
around.
Will. They will. I'm feeling confident.
Well, thank you very much.
Awesome. It's a pleasure to have you on Bird Talk. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Bird Talk, special accommodation provided by University Advancement. Thank you to Brandy Rideout, production provided by David Sharman, and I'm your host, Jamie Hurst. Keep running, roadies.